I am Plant on the Line in Vancouver at thecommentary.ca. Mark Leiren Young joins me now. He's just published his latest book, a memoir, Free Magic Secrets Revealed. I started it this past weekend and I found it to be a really funny, heartfelt, and engaging book. The young Mark is a teenager who wants to be a writer and who loves magic. He wants to impress a girl in school, and he thinks writing a script for a rock and roll magic show will win her over. I'll get Mr. Leiren Young to tell us about this book, what growing up was like for him, as well as the recent stage production of Never Shoot a Stampede Queen, which was based on a previous book, the Stephen Leacock Award-winning book of the same name. Mark Leiren Young is a gifted writer, journalist, playwright, and screenwriter. He has written stage productions that have been seen throughout the world. As well, he's written, directed, and produced The Green Chain, a feature film. A lot of us in this town first knew of him as one half of the comedy duo Local Anxiety. Visit Leiren-Young.com for more. Free Magic Secrets Revealed is published by Harbor. Please welcome to the Plant Online program, in person, as it were, Mark Leiren Young. Mr. Leiren Young, good morning.
Hi, thanks for having me here.
Thanks for coming in to do this. I appreciate it. As I said when you came in here, I've known of you for years, and so it's a pleasure to meet you.
Hey, it's great to be here. This is fun.
So Never Shoot a Stampede Queen was not the first book, right? That was the second book, is that right?
Never Shoot a Stampede Queen was the first book. It was a comedy memoir.
Uh-huh.
And, I mean, I've done other stuff. The first book I ever did was probably The Little Book of Reform, but I sort of don't count that. It was a collection of quotes about the Reform Party.
Yeah. And The Green Chain, that was a memoir too, was it? Or?
No, The Green Chain was a book about... The Green Chain was really a book about the movie I made, The Green Chain, and it was a collection of interviews that I did for a podcast series that followed up the book.
That was followed up on the Taii, right?
Yeah. The Taii ran a series of interviews that I did because what I wanted to do, the Green Chain movie was about our forests, and I wanted to continue the discussion outside the theater. Mm-hmm. So the way I decided to do that was with a podcast series where I interviewed a ton of people for their opinions on the trees. And the response to the podcast series was so good, they started collecting that I had an offer to collect the interviews in a book. So the book includes interviews with people ranging from like George Bowering to Sipora Berman to Jackson Davies talking trees, and the script for the movie. So that's The Green Chain.
And so this book is you're growing up as a teen in Vancouver.
Yes.
And then Never Shoot a Stampede Queen was your, I guess, your start in journalism, right?
Yes, it was.
So you've gone backwards, I guess, in the timeline, right?
I have gone backwards in the timeline.
Well, what's it like to write about one's life? I mean, I find that I find it interesting that you've made your life fodder for two books already. I think that's fascinating.
It's funny because it really started as an accident.
Yeah.
The Williams Lake book, which was the first one, was originally written to collect the stories. I had the strangest time in Williams Lake. I mean, literally, I drove into town, and my first night in town, I pulled up on the scene of an armed robbery. And it never stopped being weird. Like, that was the perfect introduction to Williams Lake, and it never mellowed out from the whole time I was there. I covered cases. When I went and fact-checked that book, I called the court registry and said, look, I'd like information on, you know, this case where the guy had the bomb strapped to his chest. I'd like information on this case. I rattled off three or four cases. And she said, what years were those? I said, you know, they were all 85 to 86. She went, no, they weren't.
Hmm.
I went, yeah, they were. I covered them all. She went, they can't be. They're all infamous.
Hmm.
They can't all have taken place in that same period.
Yeah.
So I caught a really crazy year. And what happened was I decided that what I'd do was write them all down while I remembered them. And because I occasionally sold columns to various people, I wrote 33 stories, all at, you know, about 1,000 word length or whatever they ranged, and sold a few to magazines, but mostly just put together this as a book for friends and family. And the whole idea was just to remember all the details that I possibly could. So, you know, then it eventually turned into a book 20 years later, turned into a play a few times, turned into a book. And with Free Magic Secrets Revealed, this all really happened when I was 17, 18. And we used to joke that I read about it one day, but I always thought I read about it as fiction.
Yeah.
And really, if Stampede Queen hadn't won the Leacock Medal, I would have pretended that this was fiction.
Yeah. Yeah, and I'm wondering what this does for the life you've lived in terms of reliving the past. I mean, growing up, for anybody, it's a tough thing. And you, I mean, you're not immune to these challenges, I mean, as we read in this book. Whatever that is, finding the girl that you like, fitting in, being bullied, etc., finding something you like and obsessing over that. Does it make it less painful, do you think, growing up? I mean, remembering it?
It's funny. It does kind of take the sting out of it. There's a review that I quote in that book, and if you told 18-year-old me that one day I would not only admit that I got that review, but quote it in its entirety, 18-year-old me wouldn't have even laughed at you, would have just probably kicked you and walked away. Like, really? You're going to publish that on purpose? Yeah. So it's kind of cool to just sort of embrace all the humiliating things you've ever done and turn them into fodder. But it's funny, with both books, I hid names both, really, so that, because I thought, it's not like somebody who knew me knew they were going to end up in a, being a book. It's not like somebody knew they were going to end up being in a book because they knew me. So I didn't think it was fair to out them. And what happened was, with Stampede Queen, gradually every single person pretty much admitted who they were.
Yeah.
With Magic Secrets, again, I changed the names. I changed just enough details that people could say, oh, no, that's not me, that's not me.
Yeah.
The day the book is published, to the magician, who's really the lead character besides me, publishes a photo on my Facebook page that outs him, that outs the actor, that outs everybody else. And he's even done this thing in Photoshop where he's scrawled under his picture, the stoner magician with an arrow, and then he's scrawled under the actor's photo, the ambitious actor, and then he's scrawled under me, the aspiring playwright. So almost everybody's already added themselves in this book. It's pretty funny.
So Randy and Kyle are the two characters you've just sort of alluded to.
Randy and Kyle. Randy the magician who changed my life. Actually, both these guys changed my life.
Is he still a magician?
Yeah, he is. Randy's real name is Steve Kaplan. I didn't think I'd be admitting that this easy, this early in the run. He's his stage name is Doctor Strange with a K. So Marvel Comics, lay off.
Yeah.
Doctor Strange with a K. And his subtitle is one that I came up with him with for him like 20 years ago, The Master of Fantasy. And Kyle is a wonderful actor named Scott McNeil, who has appeared in so many things I've done over the years. It's incredible. Scott starred in The Green Chain. He was in the first cartoon I ever wrote, which was an episode of Reboot. He's one of the best-known cartoon voiceover actors in the world, not just in Vancouver, in the world. I've seen him at Fan Expo in Toronto, and the lineups for Scott are as long as the lineups for like Star Trek stars, if not longer. It was him and George Romero who had the biggest lines the year that I was there. It was astonishing.
Growing up, the three of you were friends. I mean, you didn't start out as friends, but you become friends, right? And did you think that then that this would be what your lives would end up?
It's what we wanted. The funny part is that Steve wanted to do magic, or Randy wanted to do magic.
Yeah.
Kyle wanted to act. I wanted to write. All three of us pulled this off. And some of the other people who haven't outed themselves yet are also professional theater people now.
Yeah.
It's actually astonishing. For a 17-year-old kid with no idea what I was doing, I hooked up with some really talented people.
Yeah.
I mean, the cast of this was genuinely gifted, which you wouldn't know from having watched the show.
Yeah. So the people around you, because you said that you changed the names to protect...
the guilty.
Yeah, the innocent in some cases. Do they know ahead of time that you're writing about their lives and your life in relation to that, them?
Well, with Stampede Queen... Remember with Stampede Queen, originally I didn't write it to be published.
Yeah.
I just wrote it to share with friends. So I sent it to all my friends in Williams Lake. They loved it, and occasionally they gave me notes and said, oh, you forgot this or whatever. So when it turned into a book, everybody was pretty excited. I've had notes on the book, and some of the funniest lines in the stage play are stories that I didn't know at the time, where my old editor tracked me down and said, why didn't you include this, and why didn't you include that? I went, because you never told me that. So those things are now in the stage play. With Magic Secrets, I joked about writing this story from the time I was 17, 18.
Yeah.
We always said, oh yeah, one day Mark's going to tell the story of this crazy stage play. One day I finally did. So I did show a very early draft to Randy, a.k.a. Steve, And I showed it to my brother, I showed it to Dr. Bob, a whole bunch of the people involved saw early drafts and gave me notes, and in many cases had memories that I didn't, and I really wanted to fact check it with them. Mm-hmm. So I remember, you know, talking to Steve, Randy, and asking what I missed and trying to get more details and really trying to flesh it out once I realized I was writing this as a book.
Do you set out, when you write a book like this, other than for yourself and whatever you want to work out for you, to write it for a particular reader? Like, I mean, is there someone that should read this? Is there maybe a 17-year-old that could benefit from reading this book, from learning about 17-year-old Mark, say?
It's funny. I didn't really have a reader in mind, but I think teenagers would love this.
Yeah.
Like, I really think... I had a discussion with the publisher, and I've had a discussion with a few friends who are who write for young audiences, and said, should I just release this as a book for teenagers? And my friends who write for young audiences said, no, teenagers will just find this one.
Yeah.
They said, this isn't a book for adults, but they said they think teenagers will really like it. And the same thing happened with Stampede Queen. Is what would happen is I had friends say they brought the book home and their teenage kids stole the book and then gave it back when they were finished, which was really flattering to me. I love that, like, 15-year-old kids were stealing the book and reading it. And, you know, don't steal it from stores, but steal it from your parents. That's just fine. And I think Magic Secrets is going to be the same thing. My brother actually said he's going to read it to his class.
Really?
I think he's going to skip one chapter that gets a little risque, but otherwise he's going to read it to his class.
You're a funny guy, obviously. I mean, we've known of you for at least 20 years or so, since Local Anxiety first hit the scene. Where does that humor come from? I mean, even as a kid, you seemed like a funny kid.
I was a funny kid. I think it came from getting... And came from getting beat up as a kid. I think basically, if you're a scrawny kid and bullies are picking on you, I think you either get a smart mouth or you go into a shell. I got a smart mouth. And that used to get me picked on a little more, but I had more fun with it. I ran into some old high school friends and old elementary school friends. It was the 50th anniversary of my high school. Not my 50th reunion, but the 50th reunion. I'm not that old, but at this role, but not that long.
Yeah.
But it was the 50th anniversary of Eric Hamber Secondary
School.
That
was like a couple weeks ago, wasn't it?
Yeah. And I was actually invited to be one of the speakers. And I ran into people I'd gone to elementary school with and stuff like that. And we talked about being picked on as kids and whatever. And my defense was that I was a smartass. So that just kind of stuck with me, and that was encouraged. And my mom's funny, so my mom's got a great sense of humor, so I've got some of that from her.
There's a beautiful scene at the beginning of the near the beginning of the book where you guys go to Victoria, your class.
Yes.
And I guess there's a bomb threat or something like that, and everyone was nervous. And
the girl of my dreams asked if I'd make everybody laugh. It's funny. There are two different stories I tell about how I started to write, and I'm never sure which one's... I'm never sure which one's the first one, because they both took place in elementary school.
Yeah.
And one is, I was bullied a lot as a kid. I wrote a horror story, and they read the horror story at a place called the Quiet Room for Halloween, and, like, there were, you know, by candlelight, and I actually scared some of the bullies. I thought that was really cool. So that's one of the stories. But the sweeter story, which, like I said, I don't know if this came first or second, but the girl of my dreams, the girl who I had a crush on for way, 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 way too long in my life, approached me in the middle of a bomb scare. Our class was on a field trip to Victoria. We'd been evacuated back the bus. Everybody on the bus was panicking. And the girl of my dreams sat down next to me and said, make everybody laugh. And everybody was scared. She went, you're funny, make everybody laugh. And I told some jokes, and I'm sure they were really dumb, because what other kind of jokes do you tell in grade 6 or 7? But really dumb jokes. But I made people laugh, and I thought, this is good. Yeah. I'm making people laugh. They think they're all going to die, and I'm going to make people laugh. So that really stuck with me. And I impressed the girl. I mean, it worked on all levels.
Yeah, it did, yeah. So you always wanted to write growing up?
Yeah, absolutely. In high school, I took a course that was called Family Studies. I don't know what they call it now. And it was like a life skills class, and you're supposed to plan your career. And I had a teacher who said, well, what do you really want to do? What are you really going to, not what do you really want to, what are you going to do for a living? I said, I'm going to write. And she said, well, what's plan B? And I said, starve. This really pissed her off.
Yeah.
But I never really had a plan B. It was just, yeah. I like to tell stories. I like to write.
And you get, I mean, your life today, you're doing everything you wanted to do?
Pretty much, yeah. Yeah. I mean,
you're doing a million things, it seems.
I am doing a million different things. It's very confusing for people. I have several different agents who are all upset that I don't just focus on whatever they represent me for.
Yeah.
And every time I think I'm going to let something go, somebody invites me to try something else. So, you know, a couple weeks ago I signed with a new literary agency, Integral Artists. Yay, man! Yeah. And their acting agent, Nigel, said, why don't you have an acting agent?
Yeah.
And I don't know. So now I have an acting agent. Huh. So who knows what that'll lead to, but yeah. And I've done a guest appearance in a couple movies. I've done all sorts of different things.
But the key is you're having fun.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I love writing, so it's fun.
Yeah. And magic, because that plays a big part in this book. I saw Ricky Jay on Letterman a couple weeks ago.
Oh, he's amazing.
I've never been familiar with his work, but I just fell in love with him and what he does. He's got a new documentary out, I think, on his life and his magic. He said in the interview with Letterman that magic, because of the internet, because you can Google how things are done now, has lost sort of its allure and its mystery. But in the time that this book takes place, magic is a big deal, and it seems for you guys the biggest deal.
Oh, it was huge. For me, it's funny. I fell in love with magic because of Doug Henning. I also fell in love with magic because I had a few people around me who did it.
Mm-hmm.
So my great-grandfather used to, like, grab coins from my ears and stuff like that. And that was really cool as a kid. But Doug Henning was just turning up on TV. And Doug Henning was the guy who made magic a big deal again.
Mm-hmm.
Magic was done. There's no real way to stress this, because now you've got David Copperfield and, you know, you got Chris Angel, and there are some people who are doing, you know, Penn and Teller.
Yeah.
There are some people who are doing fantastic magic, selling lots of tickets or whatever, but magic was over until Doug Henning showed up and made it TV friendly. And now everybody kind of remembers Doug Henning as the funny Bugs Bunny looking guy who, you know, hooked up with a Maharishi. So it's really hard to remember that he inspired a genuine sense of wonder.
Yeah.
And when he talked about illusion or illusion, people bought into that.
Yeah.
And he made it fun to watch magic. But part of what appealed to me about him was the idea that this kid from Winnipeg who put together his first show with a Canada Council grant was the best in the world at something.
Yeah.
For me, the idea that a Canadian was the best in the world at anything was a big deal back then. And so part of my infatuation with magic was an infatuation with Henning, and also this weird kind of patriotism. We have the best magician in the world. That was really cool to me.
So internet has killed magic, hasn't it?
It changes the whole nature of the game. You know, it changes it to a world where you're kind of watching for style.
Yeah.
You know, it's too easy to Google a trick. I think there was a TV station that was, you know, showing how all the magic tricks were done. But it's still fun to watch a great magician do their thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I saw on Letterman, Ricky Jay pulls out a deck of cards, and you kind of know what the trick is going to be.
Yeah,
but I mean, the way that he does it is just—I mean, just to watch him talk even is fascinating.
Well, this is the thing: is I watched Randy, if you're reading the book, Steve in real life. I watched Steve do a set for my book launch. We did my book launch at the comic shop because the guys at the comic shop were sweet enough to actually sell tickets to this show a jillion years ago, and I've been buying comics from them forever, and Steve did about a 10-15 minute set before I came on to read from the book and dazzled the audience. So when you do it right, magic still works.
Yeah. Did you still commit magic?
I was never a great magician. I liked writing it. I liked writing the show. So I directed Steve to do his shows, but it's funny. We actually had a deal. Once I started directing his act, I said, don't tell me how any of the tricks are done. And if I see how they're done, I'm going to be disappointed.
Yeah.
And so for me, it was never about how the tricks worked. It was all about the presentation of them. I was more interested in how, like, the ancient tricks were done. I was obsessed with the Book of Ancient Magic and, you know, the kind of snake that you, that historians believed Moses used that turned into a stick,
mm-hmm.
you know, that turned from a stick to a snake. Stuff like that, how the Delphic Oracle worked, and that sort of stuff obsessed me, how, you know, pyramid magic or whatever. But I never really cared how stage magic was done. I just liked watching it. Still do.
And people like Penn and Teller, I mean, they're still great to watch for you?
Oh, they're fantastic. I just saw their show a little while ago and talked to them both after the show and had a blast.
Yeah. The one that talks, which one is he? Penn, I guess?
Penn.
Yeah.
Talks a lot.
Yeah. I hear him on Imus all the time, and he talks about other things other than magic, and it's just fascinating.
The two of them are brilliant.
Yeah.
Teller, in his spare time, is doing cutting-edge neurological research.
Yeah.
I mean, the two of them are just, like, actual geniuses, for real geniuses. I'm not using the term loosely.
Yeah.
You know, Penn is probably one of America's most prominent atheists. He's fascinating talking about that. And Teller directs Shakespeare in his spare time.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, their time off is directing Shakespeare, doing neurological research. That's genius level stuff.
Yeah. Where's home for you?
Vancouver.
Did you also spend time in Hawaii, is that correct?
I spent an awful lot of time in Haikou. Not as much as I'd like to.
Yeah.
For a while I was spending more. But Haikou on Maui.
Yeah, and I also read somewhere that you live in Gibson's.
I was living on the Sunshine Coast when I wrote Stampede Queen. It was that actually was the coolest line I've ever written in my life, was Mark Learn-Young splits his time between the Sunshine Coast and Haikou. And I didn't want to explain where either of these places were, because they both sounded vaguely mythological.
Yeah.
And my publisher was like, you have to say that Haikou is in Maui, everyone will be confused. I went, and I care about them being confused. Why? I live in a poem.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. I live in a poem at a place that sounds like Jack Hodgins made it up. This works just fine for me. But I moved back to Vancouver a little while ago. I still get to Maui for a bit, and I've actually been, when I go there, I tend to, you know, that's when I tend to focus on books.
Yeah.
Like, I just tune in everything else, and I tend to do longer form assignments that I've already got lined up. Books and movies or whatever.
Yeah, and so in terms of writing this book, was it fun?
Oh, it was a blast.
Yeah.
Just going.
I'm
back
curious to know where you wrote it. I mean, was it here or was it in Hawaii? Or
the first draft a jillion years ago, which sat for a long time, was written in a basement in Burnaby, where I was living at the time. But all of the revisions pretty much took place on Maui, in a place of staying in Haikou.
And looking back at the growing up years here in Vancouver, I guess this would have been the early 80s, right?
Yep.
Yeah, looking back at what Vancouver was then and what it is now, do you think about that at all?
A little bit when I was doing this.
I mean, that's what I was reading when I was reading the book, because, I mean, everything seemed familiar.
Oh, well, it all is. I didn't change the place names. There was a sweetness. It's funny. I mean, part of that's the lens of nostalgia. It didn't feel sweet at the time. But you really do catch the more innocent age. Yeah. I mean, there's a scene in there about us renting an answering machine. The changes in technology are fascinating. The number of key scenes in that book that took place in phone booths.
Yeah.
The number of quarters I spent on phone calls. And I remember us being so excited because we'd rented this huge answering machine.
Must have cost a lot too, right?
Oh, it was a fortune.
Yeah.
And, I mean, we wanted to buy one, but who could afford an answering machine? So we just went to this company that would rent one to us for like 30 or 40 bucks a month.
Yeah.
So,
or even renting phones. I mean, people used to do that. Remember
that?
Yeah.
And then you'd forget to return your phone, and BCTel would charge you a small fortune.
Greener Than Thou, this is a show that you're touring in, is that right?
It is. I did a solo show at a whole bunch of people's urging, and I was looking for a way to talk about all the environmental stuff that I've been up to, but in a funny way, and so I created a show called Greener Than Thou, worked with TJ Daw, who also directed Stampede Queen, and It played the Eminem Fringe. It's played Nanaimo. Just did a really killer performance in Salt Spring. That was huge fun. I felt like I finally got a handle on the show in Salt Spring. But I put the show aside because I was afraid that if I was touring a one-person show, mm-hmm. it was really going to interfere with trying to sell Stampede Queen.
Yeah.
So I thought I was confusing enough people with the fact that I had a book and a play out at the same time without going, yes, and if you look at this other theater, I'm performing.
Yeah.
That just actually seemed over the top.
And so Never Shoot a Stampede Queen had a run that's just wrapped up here on Granville Island, right?
Yeah, we actually had three runs. The world premiere was in Kamloops, all in the last month and a half.
Yeah.
So the world premiere was Western Canada Theater in Kamloops. Crazy sold-out run. At Western Canada Theatre, and Ryan Beale, who was just nominated for Jesse for Santaland Diaries,
yeah.
was me, I guess, and the rest of Williams Lake yeah. in Kamloops, and then Zach Stevenson took over the part
here,
but also in Duncan,
uh-huh.
and he'll be touring the show all over the place. We've got a whole bunch of places right now that are looking to bring it out.
Huh. And I understand it was a co-op production, so did you make any money off of it?
I think we did okay.
Yeah.
You know, we're still waiting for the final box office results, so I'll know it when I hear from our manager, but yeah. I think we did okay with it.
Yeah. I've heard good things about it. The reviews were quite good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It went really well. And the audiences were fantastic, because, like, I stuck around to sell the book yeah. after the show, or to sell both books after the show, and everybody wanted to talk, and what was crazy was how many people came from Williams Lake and wanted to tell me a story. So we had... One night, we had a Stampede Queen, who was the Stampede Queen who met Princess Margaret at Williams Lake, yeah. in Williams Lake. We had the parents of the current mayor of Williams Lake. Everybody had a story. It was fantastic.
What's it like to have yourself played on stage like that?
Really strange. I actually couldn't wrap my head around it.
Yeah.
The only way I could watch it was to not treat it as me, but it was funny because Zach especially studied me. Without me realizing it.
Yeah.
So I'd be at rehearsal and suddenly I'd turn and look and go, he's watching me. That's weird. And I came to rehearsal one day and I'm certainly then, I've switched over to the diet stuff now, but certainly when I was in Williams Lake, I was a diehard Coca-Cola nut. Like I could not get through a day without four or five bottles of Coca-Cola. And I show up at rehearsal one day and all over the rehearsal room, are these bottles of Coca-Cola. And what had happened was, in order to channel me,
yeah.
TJ and Zach had found a place that sold Mexican Coca-Cola, the stuff that still has the real sugar
yeah,
in it,
yeah.
and had been drinking Coca-Cola all day, and they were bouncing off the walls.
Yeah.
And I couldn't stop laughing. I'm like, I've corrupted them both. They're all, like, they're high on Coca-Cola.
Yeah. Did you still do the criticism? I mean, we used to read you the last year or so in The Sun.
Yeah, The Sun approached me last summer when Peter Burney took a buyout.
Yeah.
And I've been friends with our entertainment editor, Maggie Langrick, forever. And Maggie said, would you mind, you know, doing some theater writing for me? I said, absolutely not. Happy to do it.
Yeah.
Would you mind doing some reviewing for me? I said, are you out of your mind? And I initially thought of passing, and I thought, you know what? Why not?
Yeah.
I think we've got some really special theater in the city. And it has been such a gift to be able to watch it. And for the most part, I've really enjoyed the gig. I mean, yeah. I've seen very few shows where I've gone, wow, I wish I could have that 2 hours of my life back.
Yeah.
And for the most part, it's been astonishing. I've seen some amazing stuff. I mean, last night I got to see Mump and Smoot. They're spectacular. Go see them. They're on for a few more days. But it's been fantastic getting to see what's on here.
Yeah. And this book is doing well, I understand?
The book is doing well. I just found out that I'm doing a bit of a book tour in Calgary in the interior of BC. So I just found that out today. I'm not quite sure when I'm where, but middle of June, I'm visiting my favorite bookstore in Calgary, so that's exciting.
Yeah.
And I like that I'm going to be reading at a bookstore in Calgary. That's cool. And then I'm going to Cranbrook for Sam Steele Days, and I'll probably get out to Williams Lake to read from it, too.
Yeah. This has been such a pleasure to meet you, and I, as I said, I love this book. It's a really heartfelt, honest book, and it's really funny too. And I mean, I can't recommend it enough. Thanks for coming in to do this.
Thanks so much for having me in. This is great.
The website for more, Liren-Young.com. The book is called Free Magic Secrets Revealed. It's from Harbor Publishing. Its author, Mark Liren-Young, joined me in studio here in Vancouver. I'm Joseph Plantin.